ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 134 of the MTB podcast, presented and hosted by Worldwide Cyclery. I'm Jared.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Trevor.
You're tickled over there.
Yeah, it's because you're just like a full-blown 1980s radio host with these intros.
So you think I could get the job as radio host?
Takes a pod off and he comes back just flowing.
Just ready to rock, man.
Ready to rumble.
Ready to go.
We were speculating that you were actually watching the doing the full Lord of the Rings extended edition. Did you do that?
No, that would have been a really good call, though. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just checking. I don't know. That happens.
All right. Well, in this episode, we are going to be discussing all sorts of new products from Fox, Raceface, and Marzocchi, a new bike from Forbidden, how Trevor is prepping his bike for Utah, and my speculation is how Jared is not prepping his bike for Utah.
That's actually not true. I did some changes too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jared's been doing pretty good about that.
Wait till the segment. We'll hear about it.
I'm pretty excited, but I'll wait.
And of course, the usual excellent listener questions ranging from which WC employee would win in a UFC fight to if you should go for a one quiver bike and everything in between.
That's a great question because it really makes you think, you know. Like Trevor would, and like imagine Trevor versus John or something like that. Like that would be gnarly.
I would not want to fight John.
I'm not fighting John.
No, but I mean, again, we'll save it for the segment, but that would be crazy.
Zach's words of wisdom, which he pawned off to Matt Bradley and using Matt's words, and I'm pawning off to Trevor to read. Go ahead.
Matt Bradley's words of wisdom. People are more important than things.
Mm-hmm.
That is the truth.
That's true.
Yep.
Don't get stuck up in buying stuff you don't need.
Yep.
Tell that to people in Miami.
Your relationships with your family and your friends are probably the most important thing in life. So
that's right.
Keep those good. Thank you, Matt.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt. Well, kind of along those lines is like collect experiences, not things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I like that one too. That's kind of in the same vein.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So inspirational.
Yeah.
So cool, dude.
It's really inspirational. Nice, did I just inspire you, man?
Nice.
You inspired?
I'm inspired. Inspired for
you
sure.
You know, I'm inspired by this fantastic testimonial.
Just got some kettle socks, and man, do they feel great with my Crocs, Benji.
And you know what? You slip on some kettle socks and some sandals, and it's like you're in another world.
Are you supposed to go without socks and Crocs?
I don't think so.
Or socks and Crocs?
I have no idea.
I've never worn Crocs, though.
So. I think there's all etiquette is just out the window when it comes to Crocs. Just
do
whatever you want. Like, if you're going to wear Crocs, you're clearly the kind of person who just does whatever you want.
Kind of a free spirit.
Yeah, you're a free spirit. So
this comes from a guy with a pair of Crocs.
You have a pair of Crocs.
You have a pair of Crocs?
Yeah, well, my adventure race teammate was very specific about having Crocs. And he does have a good point. So in adventure racing, your feet are what always fall apart. So when you get to the transition area, the first thing you have to do is take your shoes and socks off and powder your feet. Because if they're wet for too long, then you're toast.
You get soggy.
You actually get this thing called trench foot.
Trench foot.
Yeah, which is like a bacterial infection of the skin if your skin is wet for more than 48 hours. So it's really important to take care of your feet in those long distance, long term races. So he's like, when you do that, take your shoes and socks off, powder your feet, put your Crocs on, and then you leave your shoes and everything to kind of air dry, and you just have your powdered feet in the Crocs for the whole time. And then the last thing you do is put your fresh socks and shoes back on.
Hmm.
So I bought some Crocs for that. Yeah, they're nice, man. They're like wide, squishy, recovery. I don't know. They're pretty practical.
Yeah.
They're waterproof. They don't really ever smell. They're like, I don't know. I'm not going to like sell you Crocs, but like... For their use case, they work great. Just like for their use case, water shoes work great. You know? It's just a different pair of shoes for different reasons.
I mean, there's a reason people all over the world have Crocs.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Crocs is a massive, it's a publicly traded company.
Wow.
So billions of dollars worth of those things.
Wow.
I will say, when we spent all this time and effort figuring out just the right amount of merino wool and nylon blend and cushioning and like did all this specific work on the kettle socks for these, like using them for long-term outdoor pursuits, I didn't think someone would ever be like, just got them and they feel great with my Crocs. But you know, socks, some days you do gnarly stuff with them, some days you just wear them in your Crocs. So
yeah,
Benji, I hope you're enjoying them.
Thanks,
in your
Benji.
Crocs.
Yeah, thanks, Benji, and we appreciate that. You know what else we appreciate? Fun facts.
Yep,
this one's a doozy. Canada is south of Detroit.
Sheesh.
Isn't that nuts? Mind blown.
Mind blown.
Yeah. And if you look at the map, I mean, it's true. Not only that, but it doesn't make sense. They just were like, it's like someone was drunk and also blindfolded when they drew the border, you know?
Yeah. That whole, I'm just looking at it now, that whole border drawing situation is a little confusing.
Well, it's around the Great Lakes, though, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which is just, yeah, all very arbitrary, right? They're mm-hmm. like, well, we're going to put it here. And they're
it's
like,
just this one you know? Little arm here of, what is it, Ontario? It's just like, oh, let's just extend this all the way down to Detroit.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm. They weren't looking at the Google Maps image when they figured that out back in the day.
Could have just made a nice straight line.
They could have just made a nice straight line.
And then Toronto would be in the U.S. if they would just kind of sliced her.
That'd be convenient.
Sliced her, Christ.
You know?
Toronto's nice, dude. That's a really nice
city. Yeah. Love that part of Canada.
I've been in Toronto, and it's one of the cleanest cities I've ever been to in a downtown scenario.
Really?
Everything was clean and organized, and it was great.
Nice.
Yeah, Canada's a nice place. They have a nice winter cleansing effect there every year, I've heard about, where everything just freezes.
Hmm.
And it's nice and cleaned up, you know?
I see what you mean there.
Yep. You don't believe me? Go somewhere tropical, and you'll see a lot different situation.
Yep.
That makes sense.
I agree with that.
Cleansing effect.
That makes sense.
If you get a chance to go to Toronto area in the summertime, it's absolutely beautiful as well. Yeah. Like a little north of Toronto, there's like on the Rocky Crest, there's a bunch of just lakes, and it's gorgeous up
That's
there.
That's pretty sick.
Yeah, really
I heard is. They got some mountain biking out there too.
Mm-hmm.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
Emily Batty's from north of Toronto.
There you go. Household name.
Household name.
Yeah.
Smoking hot chick, mountain bike racer.
Household name. Speaking of which, we're going to Utah.
Going to Utah.
Yeah.
Both of you guys are going.
Yeah, we are.
Going to St. George to Hurricane.
Hurricane, Utah.
Yeah.
Virgin, which Utah. Is
apparently very specifically Hurricane and Hurricane. Not Hurricane.
Yep.
There's no E on the end of it, right?
Or is there is.
There's an E, but it's Hurricane.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, we heard it from the Hurricaners themselves. Yes, what do you call somebody who is from Hurricane? Hurricaner? I'm a Hurricaneite? All right, we'll go right past that one.
I'm sure in the comments or somewhere we'll hear about it.
Somebody will let us know.
People always let us know when we pronounce anything wrong.
But, you know.
So Chasing Epic Trip, what, 4 days of mountain biking?
Yeah. Well, 4 days total, I think 3 days of riding. Just a short little trip.
Epic trails.
Yeah.
Some shuttles, some loops. Should be some technical desert riding. So sharp rocks. Maybe the cactus here and there. I don't know if there's cactus there. Maybe not a lot.
I don't know. You ever ridden bikes there in St. George? Hurricane?
No.
Virgin, aside from your stint at Red Bull Rampage?
I've been Grand Junction and Fruta is probably the closest I've ever been to that terrain, I guess.
Okay.
But
nice.
I don't think I ever went out there, no.
Yeah, so.
Oh, it looks cool.
We're getting the bikes prepped.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the plan? So like what would, if you're going to go on a trip like that or anywhere for that matter, my thought process is I watch some YouTube videos, do a little research, geography, mm-hmm. look at some trail forks, try and figure out what the terrain's like, and then I start thinking from there.
Yeah.
But you probably already knew to some extent what that area
is. For some extent, like. I mean, for the people that are going on the trip, for the Chasing Epic trip, not all that's taken care of. So it kind of takes the guesswork out of it, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was to go solo or with a buddy and try and figure it out myself, yeah, I would look at trail forks. I would look at YouTube videos, see what's popular and see what style of riding it's going to be first and kind of go from there and decide what kind of tires I want to pick and maybe like what style of bike you want to use. Not everyone can do that, but it is important to make sure you have the right style of bike to maximize your experience out there.
For sure.
So that area, what have you determined is the terrain and trails and what are you going to do for your bike?
So I'm going to bring my Yeti SB140, which I think is the perfect bike out there. It's the lunch ride edition. So it's 160 fork, 140 rear travel, and going to try out some new Forge and Bond carbon wheels out there, which should be pretty sweet. Pretty excited to try those out. And got some Maxxis rubber on there. Got a double down in the rear for a little protection and a little bit of stiffness to just keep everything safe. And a Dissector double down for the rear. And then I've got an Assegai AXO Plus casing max grip in the front for as much traction as I can get.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Ultra traction.
So
no inserts?
No inserts. Just correct PSI. Remember, I'm probably 28, 24. And
raw dog it.
Go for it. Hopefully not blow up any wheels, but that's not the plan. So
yeah.
Keep it sustainable and keep it smooth and enjoy the time out there.
Yep.
What are you riding, Jared?
Well, it's funny you ask. I got my Forbidden Druid V2. Also set up double down tires, double down aggressor in the rear and a max grip Assegai double down in the front.
Nice.
That is pretty much all I did. Yeah, I got my Crank Brothers synthesis wheels on there, and I've had those on there for a long time. Had those in Italy and other bike parks. And
those are carbon rims, right?
Those are carbon, yeah. Yeah. They've held up great. I mean, those are super good wheels. And yeah, I got the new Fox stuff on there. That was pretty cool. I got the new
Float. This is a great segue into Forbidden having a new bike, which we were going to talk about next, and Fox having a bunch of new suspension and a dropper post.
I think I did that on purpose. So yeah, I got the 36 with the Grip X damper. So it's almost kind of like a Grip 2
in gold.
In gold, kind of like a Grip 2.
You're going to ride that fork out there.
Yeah,
the same setup you have right now.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Schmelted gold.
Schmelted gold.
Going to Utah. Wow.
Schmelted gold in Utah. Nice. Yeah, I thought about putting my other fork on, but I'm like, yeah, it's just a lot of work and it's dialed right now. So I'm just going to leave it and then, you know, figure it out when I get back. But long story short, got the Grip X and the Fox 36, which is pretty cool because it's like a Grip 2, but you can crank that compression knob all the way and it basically locks it out. They're like firms it up. It's not fully locked out, right? But it's about as locked out as you'd want to like get up out of the saddle and mash the pedals, you know, on a fire road climb or something like that. So that's pretty cool because I think a lot of people, you know, and there's a lot of bikes out there, right? Like all mountain bikes that, you know, you want like that Grip 2 descending performance, but you're sometimes like, oh man, I wish I didn't have a bobby fork when I'm out of the saddle climbing. So
there's a lot of technical climbing out there.
Yeah. Nice. So I probably won't use that very much because I like to have it open on the climbs. Yeah. But yeah, it's just nice for long fire road or just road slogs and you're just cruising. But then they also have Grip X2, which is just an evolved form of the Grip 2. And then also Grip SL, which is like an evolved form of Fit 4, which brings kind of like grip damper technology to that kind of shorter travel segment, which is pretty cool. So there's a lot of new damper stuff going on internally with shims and everything. Probably Trevor Liam would be really great to explain all that. I personally, like, yeah, it's got this, like, stims. Yeah, stims and shacks.
Stims and shacks.
Stims and shacks. Great. I love it. Feels great on the trail.
Well, we will drop a link below in the podcast description for the link to our article where we talk all about that stuff in more extensive detail.
That's right.
And then maybe next time we have Liam on here, we'll just go into more hardcore nerdage.
Deep dive. Yeah.
And then we'll have some more time on those things too, because I haven't even ridden all that new stuff. Just you and Liam have so far. Have you tried it out yet?
I have not.
No. Yeah. So
it's pretty sweet. Yeah. And then they got a new Fox 32, which is this crazy looking reverse arch that's like engineered to have the lightest strength to weight ratio. So super strong, but super light. It's like the lightest cross country fork they've ever made.
The arch has holes through it, right?
Yes.
It's not just a complete arch.
It's like a lattice. It
looks great.
It is super cool. And I was super tripped out when I saw it at first. Wasn't really sure if I liked it, but and then I saw it like on a bike and I was like, okay, that actually looks pretty
cool. Amazing that I always thought the reverse arch did not look very good. It just looked super wrong to me.
All the Manitou forks.
Yeah, but then they kind of flipped the script and made an arch that no one's ever seen before with the kind of latticing together like mm-hmm. that. They made it look good.
So yeah.
Good job on them for doing that.
Yeah. If it was just like a regular Fox arch flipped around, it would have been like, oh, you know, whatever. But this is actually like, oh, okay, you guys actually made this like super light and it's strong and it's a new design. So it's all pretty cool. They didn't just like...
They did their homework.
Exactly. They didn't just like slap something on there and call it a day. So
yeah. And the objective was to make the lightest possible cross-country fork on the market. So got to get creative with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's kind of what they did too with the damper. Like they shed weight off the damper. So like, well, let's go to the chassis. So they shed weight off the chassis. You made it stiffer and lighter. So that's pretty cool.
And it's gold.
That one came in gold too, which is a limited edition color. Which will be available. I will say every time Fox has done these custom limited colors, which I think the last time was a long time ago, right?
Yeah, it was 2020 maybe. Or
they did pistachio root beer 21? And Battleship.
Yeah.
That pistachio colors. Looks so good.
Still looks so good. Those
all sold out unbelievably fast.
Yeah.
And like there's only a small batch that they make. And, you know, they just disperse that between like 10 retailers or so.
Yeah.
And then once they're gone, they're gone. So,
yeah.
If you're interested in that color, you can see it now. All the pictures are available. And if you want it, get on that email alert. Yeah. And we're going to get them all. And they'll probably be in stock for two days.
Yeah. A day or two.
So.
So that's pretty cool. And then they also have a new transfer post, which is a huge deal.
Yeah. You were the most excited about this, I think, from when you came back from your little...
Yeah.
Your little trip to Fox.
Little trip to Fox.
Trip to the HQ.
It is super exciting because it's like everything I've ever wanted in a transfer post. Like you can adjust the air pressure, the travel, You can service it. It's like, okay, so these are all
more
things
user
that,
serviceable.
Yeah, more user serviceable. So these are all things that you
was
had
kind of
hang-ups about.
Complained about the last one. Yeah, right? It was like it wasn't.
You couldn't charge it up. Like,
I'm so excited about that personally as a, right? as a mechanic.
You're like, oh,
there's
my
nothing
God.
Worse than like giving a customer back or a dropper post that's not even that old, and I have to send it out to service to fix it or have these crazy special tools and
yeah.
lots of money to fix.
It's annoying.
When it could just be solved by a Schrader valve and an air pressure.
So, yeah, exactly. So
I'm super glad Fox has fixed that. And yeah, I've had bad experiences with Fox posts in the past. So
yeah,
I'm excited about this new one. It should be pretty good.
Totally. I mean, like, kind of got it with like the last version. Like, you could unscrew the collar, grease it, whatever. That still didn't really solve all the problems, no, right? Like, yeah. you still were like, oh, I just want to top up the pressure in this thing. Like, let me do it. And now they just sort of like, okay, cool. Here you go. Do it. So,
and when it does feel good, it feels amazing.
Yeah.
It's super smooth. It tops out nicely when it does top out. And
yeah.
Yeah, it feels great. So, super excited about that.
It feels great. I'm stoked on it.
I was going to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
So, historically, Fox has done this very confusing thing where in the spring, they release their product line, and that's named as the next year.
Yeah, so this is all model year 2025.
Is it, though?
Yes.
Because on the pink bike stuff, they're putting 2024.
It's all model year 2025.
Okay,
because so released in 2024.
Their, yeah, because Fox, they called it like model year 25 product recon when we went up there. So, I mean, that's like kind of how they do it in like the car industry.
The car industry
and
is the same way.
Other things, like, which is stupid. Like how Rivian's like, you can order the 2027 R3. And it's like, what year is it?
It's a pre-order.
Pre-order. And it's like available in 29. But whatever. Anyways, long story short, yeah, the new Fox Transfer is really cool. Yeah, like I said, everything you wanted in a Transfer is in a Transfer now.
Yeah, nice.
And like, you don't have to like make excuses like, well, it's not as good, but it's Fox, and it's really cool looking. Like, no,
you
also
can finally match all your Kashima and have like a really, really reliable, easily serviceable dropper post.
Well said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something cool. else coming out new from that whole family, I should say, is the new Marzocchi Super Z fork. New fork from Marzocchi. Is it Marzocchi or Marzocchi?
I believe it's Marzocchi.
Marzocchi.
That's what they're calling it.
I mean, it's originally an Italian company. Yeah, how do they probably not pronounce
the
like
Italians call it.
Yeah. Marzocchi.
Yeah, so a new Super Z fork. It's a it's basically a 38 with a Grip 2 damper. Grip X damper.
Grip X, right? Yeah.
Yep. So just meant for, it's like a 190 travel fork or up to 190 travel fork. Mm-hmm. It's meant for bike park, free ride, a little bit of a cheaper cost fork. I think it's still $1,000, but relatively cheaper and kind of meant for that free ride crowd. Looks great. It's got a red and black colorway to it and something a little bit different, little different offering from Fox Race Face Marzocchi family, and kind of cool.
Yeah, it's pretty sick. We had the Bomber Z1. I actually had multiple Bombers on my bikes in the past, and they're always really good. So this is like a no-brainer for them.
Yeah, killer idea for just like the price point.
Yeah.
Free ride, price point, strength, like definitely a good, I don't know, it fits in well to the sort of
it's
Fox lineup.
If you want a 38, but you don't want all the bells and whistles of a full-on factory race fork, then this is kind of what you would want to get.
Yeah.
Just like something it's still very high performance.
Want, what is it, like 300, 400 bucks less?
Yeah.
I think so. Like that? I think, I don't know if they like released exact pricing for us, but it's definitely comes at a more affordable price point. And like, kind of like I was telling Trevor earlier, I feel like that like kind of wallet friendly super enduro fork is like kind of that market segment's a little underserved. Like you get the Domain, which is like, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a decent fork. And like Zeb Select, again, it's like okay for the money, but like Marzocchi has always been like a super solid product in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think this would be a great e-bike fork.
Yeah.
Just something super stiff and something that you don't need anything crazy for. And,
and you're not worried about weight at all.
Not worried about weight. It's super stiff.
Priced well.
It's going to be reliable. It's gonna be great.
Yeah for sure.
Yeah. Well, solid points.
Yeah. And to segue into our last product that we were going to talk about is Race Face Aero Wheels, which are pretty sweet, actually super affordable for like, I mean, comparatively to other carbon wheels, affordable carbon wheel set. I think it's like 15 or 1600 bucks for the set, which with vault hubs, super solid hubs. So it's pretty sweet little wheel set. Also lifetime warranty inclusive of crashes, which is pretty sweet. That they just offer that and back that up. I mean,
inclusive of crashes.
Yes. So if you're whatever racing, wad yourself, break a wheel, I mean, they'll still back you up and get you a new wheel. So, and that's a whole new wheel. They'll send you a whole new wheel. They don't like rebuild it. they probably, I have no idea. Who knows what they do with all of the wheels that they get?
Hopefully something.
Hopefully something.
Yeah, I remember I was always questioning that when Reserve came out with their warranty. It kind of was like a little bit of a groundbreaking warranty, right?
And for sure.
Yeah.
They would send you a new wheel set in like a couple of days.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what do you do with the hub? Or where all those hubs?
Yeah, that's
go,
what I wonder. I mean,
they're not new.
Maybe they go on like a demo wheel set or something like that, or
Mercado Libre. You know what that is?
I don't.
It's the eBay of South America.
Oh my god! Oh, is it?
So literally, that's amazing.
That's so funny.
I mean, I would buy a hub from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Totally, especially if it's affordably priced. I mean, that's just my guess. Right? There's I haven't seen any videos about sort of that style thing in the mountain bike world, but in the electronics world, so when you trade your iPhone in or your laptop, there's the whole like exposés on where all this stuff goes, and there's companies that are built off of just getting all of these old electronics and refurbishing them and then selling them on these different marketplaces around the world.
Wow.
And it's a huge operation because so many people trade in phones on a daily basis. Yeah, it's
there's valuable stuff in them too. It's like,
yeah, you know? Totally. Well, that's the thing. If they're not refurbishable, they'll strip them down for like the actual materials inside of there that try to sell that material. It's wild. It's like a whole ordeal.
It's crazy.
It's pretty interesting.
Wow.
Well, least but not last, we've got to talk about the new Forbidden.
That's right. New Forbidden, Dreadnought V2. Updated, like similarly how we saw the Druid V1 updated the Druid V2. This new Dreadnought V2 has an inverted 4-bar suspension design and also has 10 millimeters more travel. So we're talking 170 fork, 160 rear travel.
Yeah, this is like their flagship full-fledged enduro bike.
Super exactly.
Pretty cool to see a revision on that.
Exactly. So
comes spec'd pretty nicely. It's like full RockShox,
mm-hmm.
like Exo transmission and Mavens and a Vivid and a Zeb.
Yeah.
So it's ready to eat.
Yeah, this thing.
Yeah, UDH
is, ready to smash to eat for sure.
The colors look amazing. I should add.
Yeah.
The that yellow and red with the red Zeb looks insane.
Yeah.
I think personally I would get that I'm not sure what the color is called,
it's
but
called like Freddy T or what's it
the,
called? Yeah,
the green into
Fatty
the gray.
Fatty T.
Looks amazing. I'm gonna call it the Freddy Cougar.
Freddy Cougar? The blue and or the yellow and red?
No, the green and the kind of darker one.
Oh yeah, okay.
Forbidden's just super on top of it.
Looks great. They're killing it.
They're really attentive to all the details
on
these new bikes, and they're just really like nailing everything in terms of their sizing, the way they're adjusting the chainstays per size. Like all this stuff is just they've just hit every little tiny detail.
It's like they're listening and they don't have to like report to a certain agenda by some higher up. You know, they're just doing what the people want, and I think the people appreciate that.
Yeah, and I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure the guys who started Forbidden were from Norco. And so they kind of were like, well, we're going to do everything that we've like been wanting to do this whole time. That's kind of what it
seems
like.
And just do it faster and do it like for the rider rather than for, you know, monetary reasons.
Exactly. But yeah, kind of like you said, they're hitting all like the points that you would want. You know, they got accessory mount underneath the top tube. You've got the down tube storage compartment, size specific chainstays. You could do mixed wheels or full 29, and you can swap it out with those dropouts. So it's
new dropouts are pretty cool.
Also, press in headset. So you could do a reach adjust headset or an angle adjust headset. So it's like there's a lot of options and possibilities there with this bike. And with the old one, you saw people doing like dual crown forks and stuff like that, which is pretty sick.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a rad bike. I think they're really just firing on all cylinders over there and just moving quick too, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's third new bike in a year, basically. Yeah. Druid V2 and the Supernaut and Dreadnought V2. It's like, okay.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
This is like the definition of the benefits you get from buying a bike from a boutique bike brand. Like this is the culmination of all of it.
For sure.
Like these things are coming out quick. They're updating things fast. They're updating what matters. They're attentive to every single detail that everyone cares about and wants to see changed. Like they're just hitting all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like those are all the benefits that you get that you just totally would not get buying a big box brand.
Well said.
Yeah.
And also like the, you know, other cool things about a boutique brand like that you like, you know, like you call and like you talk to a person, you know, you don't have to go through like a bunch of random like menus and stuff just to talk to somebody. You're like,
you're supporting a small brand.
Exactly.
Good people that are working
riders
hard to make amazing bikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jared, how have you been getting on with your Druid V2?
Yeah. I love the V2. It's great. I mean, I recently like stripped it down and built it back up just to clean and grease everything. And that was like a super easy process. I was actually blown away. You were with me when I was doing that, I'm pretty sure, in the back. But yeah, it's like all things are well thought out. It's like the same size bolt for all of all the bolts for the linkage are on the same side. Typically, they're all like right next to each other. All goes back together super easy. And I was just like, whoa, all the bearings are in the link itself, like not pressed into the carbon or anything. So
now that you've been on it for a while, how do you feel about pedaling a high pivot like trail bike?
Definitely has its pros and cons, you know. Definitely a pro would be like the capability, like the thing can absolutely eat, and it actually like has an insatiable appetite for like just chunky trails and like steep trails, even though it's not like a super slack bike or anything.
But it can handle it though.
Yeah, it can handle it, and it still like is pretty efficient. Like on these days that when we were in Italy, it's still like riding all day.
Yeah, totally.
You know, huge days on the bike, and it's still, I don't feel like I'm pedaling around a slug. But with that said, like I'm not like a huge fan of having the idler pulley, like just, I don't know, because out here I think it just, it suits a different style of rider, right? Like,
yeah.
I think a high pivot with idler like suits the sort of like winch and plummet crowd, as you would say, where like you're just kind of going up to the top and you're shredding down a super steep trail.
Whereas, I haven't heard that term before, but it makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, right. And then like out here, you don't really do that kind of riding as much, except for it's like Suicide or Rocky Peak. And even then, like you have a pretty long ride to get to the top of your descents. So I kind of crave something a little more efficient at times, but it's so fun on the downhill. It's like every time I do that, then I'm like, oh, this bike is amazing. Like it's really fun on the downhills.
A lot of the trails around here were really like covering a lot of distance.
Exactly.
Instead of just going up and straight down, you're right about that.
Yeah. So just, yeah, serves a different rider, like, you know, a different purpose.
Yeah. I wonder too, I guess that's what's hard because you kind of need to test all these bikes in different settings, but climbing something that's really chunky and just ledged out like Dead Cow, for example, or imagine Dead Cow but less steep,
right?
So like a lot of places, like here we pretty much just have up or down, like there's very few sort of flats or rolling hills, like you're just going up or down, whereas a lot of other places, especially out east, you ride and there's a lot of sections that are these like sort of long chunky, barely, they're like flat chunk for, and that's like a huge percentage of the ride is this like flat chunk, which is super tiring. But I think a high pivot would be awesome in that setting too.
For sure.
Like you just be able to pedal through that stuff easier. And then your bike would just handle really well through that like low speed stuff where you're using a ton of the suspension travel.
For sure.
So.
Yeah. And it is like absolutely amazing on technical climbs. Like I have never had a bike so good on tech climbs that just will not lose grip and it just tracks over everything. But yeah, if you're just kind of cruising up fire roads, like, you know, it's really whatever. But
nice.
Yeah. Great. Solid. Bike. Pros and cons.
Pros and cons. Well,
yeah, pretty much every bike, right?
Take a quick intermission while you can go look at it and smile since it has a clean gold fork on it right now.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Hello, mountain bikers. Just a quick favor to ask. If you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you've probably heard us talk about Trail One components. Trail One is a brand we co-founded that has been our outlet to design the exact components we have always wanted with a very overqualified engineer. We have a growing line of components, but one I wanted to mention today was our most popular product, the Hell's Gate Grips. We put a ton of effort into the design of these things, which we feel combines all of the best little elements of all of our favorite grips into one. The grip has also been responsible for donating $8,000 to supporting a trail building network in Kajabe, Kenya, where the Hell's Gate National Park is located, and home to some epic mountain bike trails and trail builders that now have some added financial support thanks to all those who have given the Hell's Gate grips a try. If you want to check them out, you can see them at trail1.bike and snag 25% off with the code MTBpodcast25. That's TRAILONE.bike, and the code is MTBpodcast25. Muchos gracias, amigos.
And now back to the show. Listener questions. Hey, fellas. Hey, fellas. I've really enjoyed mountain biking and shredding some gnarberries, but to further my skills, I think I'll build up a full custom. Sorry, his exact words, custom full sauce unicycle. I know you probably get this question all the time, but what would be the best dropper post suspension fork combo for this? And would this be a good application for an oval chainring? Looking forward to your wisdom. Thanks.
Have you guys ever ridden a unicycle?
I've tried.
It's so hard.
Everyone's tried. They're impossible.
They're so hard. I've tried next to a wall or next to a curb I could hold on to, and I still couldn't do it.
It's really hard.
I think it's just one of those things, you either can do it or you just can't.
I figured if anybody could, it'd be you.
I got okay at it. Like I could probably ride 100 feet.
Wow. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
And I tried a lot, enough to the point where I like I just can't do this anymore.
But like not to the point where you would ride.
Because the bike shop worked as a kid. We had one there. So I would just like mess around with it occasionally. And that's cool. I got enough to where I could like get up, go a little ways and fall over. But I could never like ride the thing. Like I couldn't really steer it. I couldn't stay on it for a really long time. I was like, this is just, I don't know. Some people have it.
I think I'd rather ride like an actual pogo stick.
Yeah. Which
pogo sticks are super fun.
Mm-hmm. This thing that he's describing almost sounds like a pogo stick with a wheel.
With some damping.
And I guess pedals and a crank. But I tried to find like what this guy was even talking about. And like I couldn't even find like a unicycle with a suspension fork, let alone dropper post.
I've seen one with a dropper post where you can actuate it underneath the saddle.
Really?
And you can drop that up and down in person. I've seen that before. Like, you know where they have those dropper posts, those manual ones where you can press it underneath
the little
Yeah,
that's one.
That's
man, you guys don't remember the one famous unicycle dude? I forget his name, but he was in all the New World Disorder
movies. Like Ride Sedona or like...
Yeah, he was in all... See, you're dating yourselves too young right now. If Wade Simmons was here, he would tell us all about it.
Yeah. Oh, man.
This guy, so all these OG freeride mountain bike movies, there was a segment of this dude who would just shred this unicycle on the same trails. He would ride North Shore mountain bike trails on a unicycle.
It's crazy.
Hit huge drops, hit jumps. It was unbelievable. Actually. Yeah. It was really cool. It's all super old school stuff. I don't know what happened. I mean, he must have just, you know, threw in the towel on that idea, but he was in all those videos before.
Did he have a fork?
So off-road, no, well, it's not, I don't know if it's called a fork, but there is a piece of suspension in there.
Really?
Yeah. And then it has a free wheel and it had a brake on it.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. It has a brake lever.
So
he
wouldn't like be pedaling up to these things and like pedal.
No,
pedal,
it wasn't jump. A fixed one. It was okay. Like it had a free wheel and a brake.
I didn't even know they had those either.
Crazy.
On learning a lot.
How do you even, how would you even use that with a free wheel? I don't know if that makes sense.
You get a balance.
Yeah. How do you coast? Really good. How do you really coast good. On a unicycle? Like I'd never even.
These are things we'll never know how to do. And we're going to go to the grave not knowing how.
When I first started riding bikes, I was riding Hummingbird at Rocky Peak. It's kind of an iconic trail back in the day. And one of the very first times I rode it, I saw a guy going down it on a unicycle.
No way.
And I was mind blown. I haven't seen someone ride a unicycle on a mountain bike trail since.
That is crazy.
It's pretty cool.
I feel like I've seen somebody riding a unicycle like in Sedona or something. I'm like, that would just be crazy.
This is him. I just Googled New World Disorder unicycle guy. Chris Holm.
Legend.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a legend, man.
That's crazy. He's on Wikipedia.
Born in 1973, is Canadian, best known for riding unicycle in off-road conditions, has ridden since 1985 and considered one of the pioneers of off-road unicycling and is the world's best known unicyclist. He is the founder of competitive unicyclist trials.
Wow. That's some talent and skill right there.
That's what I'm
saying.
It
was the 1999 North American, 2002 World, and 2005 European Unicycle Trials Champion.
Can you imagine, like, bro, you think you're good on a bike? Take off one of those wheels. Let's see what you can do. Like, dude, what? That's insane.
He also held the unicycle side hop world record from 1998 to 2004.
how many hops?
I don't know.
That's amazing. Well, sorry, dude. We don't really have a lot of experience with this.
Hit up Chris Holm. I bet he's probably looking at his Instagram message requests these days. I don't think he's that popular anymore.
Yeah, hit up Chris Holm, and he might have some... you know, advice for an off-roading cycle like that.
I wouldn't even know if an oval chainring would be good for that or not. I just don't have enough experience on a unicycle.
It seems like it would be weird.
Look at this. He's got a laundry list of video appearances notable media appearances.
Wow.
Ripley's Believe It or Not. You got to see this. More Than Human. World Fantastic
Heroes.
Come
on the podcast.
National Geographic.
That'd be sick. Yeah. Wow.
It's rad.
Unreal. You learn something new every day.
What a guy.
Trevor, do you want to read this next question?
Yeah. I've got a SB130 that I use as a one bike quiver that is being swapped to an SB140 for a crash replacement. I put in 20 plus park days this year and it's time to get a park rig. Not looking for an enduro or downhill race bike, and I like to jump and goof around, but hit it all. Would y'all recommend an enduro bike or a DH bike? I would argue that you can convert your SB140 into a sweet park rig.
Yeah.
If you like to jump around.
If you still pedal the SB140, then you could just kind of keep it as is and then just get a full-fledged downhill bike, which is the most fun thing in the world if you're going to actually use it at bike parks.
Yeah, 20 plus days is a lot at a park. And if you're going to be
20 more than most people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a lot of park days.
If you're going to be just shuttling on a chairlift all day, then yeah, get a downhill bike. You're going to have the most fun and you're going to get away with things you never thought you could get away with.
Yeah. And plus, if you already have an SB140, like, you're kind of splitting hairs by getting an enduro bike. You know, just go all out, get the DH bike. Like, I don't know, get a Frameworks. That'd be pretty sick. That's what I would do. Like, you know, support Nico, and then you have a sick downhill bike that, you know, I don't know. It's pretty pretty cool.
That would be cool.
That would be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Another bike question. I am currently going into my junior season of high school mountain bike racing in Colorado. And over the two seasons, I've noticed that we usually have a couple courses, including states that get beat down and turn into dust. Oh, stages, I think that meant. Okay. Turn into dust over the other categories racing on it. I was wondering what would be the best tire choice for racing on dust slash sand. I'm riding a Scottsdale 925 with Maxxis Ardent 29 by 2.4. By the way, I love listening to the podcast on my training rides. Ardent 29 by 2.4 is what he's got.
I think the bigger, bigger profile tires will be good over the dust and sand to kind of conform to the terrain that you're riding, especially if you run a little lower pressure.
I would say like maybe an Aspen. Is that crazy? Or a Forecaster, like the original Forecaster?
I think the Forecaster in the front would be good. And something a little bit faster if you're racing, probably something a little bit faster in the rear.
Like, I don't know, Liam was just on those Aspens up at Moab Rocks. Liam was not on really a super sandy course.
Liam was on the Aspens with inserts in low PSI, which I think makes a big difference. But I think Icons would not be a bad choice.
That's true.
It depends on if you're trying to really get power out of the dust and sand. Like if you're climbing up hills and stuff, you probably want something a little bit knobbier. If you're trying to just roll fast, then that's its own thing, right?
True. Jeff, you know a lot about tires.
To be honest, I wasn't listening to the question at all.
Got him.
Off in your own world. We got
I was off my own world. Well, I was looking at a question further down.
Okay.
And it got me thinking about the El Jefe and the tie rate and these different bikes. And then I was like looking at geometry charts just spaced out. And then I heard you guys start answering the question. And I was like, oh, I missed the question.
Okay. Sandy racing on dust and sand, pick a tire.
XC
racing for sandy courses.
I would do what Liam did.
Yeah.
Icon, low pressure with inserts.
Aspen.
Oh, Aspen. That's right.
Or Icon.
Oh, that's right.
Well, he was doing a lot of experimenting like around here, and then he ended up doing Aspens.
I don't have enough experience on those tires to know. I see the Aspen tread pattern profile, and it worries me.
It's scary. Yeah,
it really is. It looks like a kindergartner just drew something up and put some trees and some lines in there.
Yeah.
And like, there you go.
I know.
But that's the thing about XC tires. Like when you have knobs that small to begin with, like does any design make a difference?
Right. Like you use it once.
Like in a blind test. Like, okay, but just blind testing tires would be a crazy thing to be able to do to begin with if it was possible. But if you were to so blind test, you know, enduro and downhill tires, I still think that most people would be able to figure it out. Whereas if you blind tested XC tires, like nobody would know. It'd be like blind testing road tires. Get out of here.
Whenever I ride XC tires, I end up just like skidding to a corner or something.
None of them have traction. That's just part. It's just. I don't know.
It is splitting hairs. It's the definition of splitting hairs.
Definitely. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think at that point, you could just test them out. I've always liked the closest I've ever got to full on XC tires is just those Recons.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good tire.
Recon Race could be good for this guy.
Yeah, that's true. I did it. I think at one point I had a Recon on Recon Race in the back.
Yeah.
And like that was the fastest sort of XC tire setup I've ever ridden.
It's a pretty fast combo.
Yeah, and it works good. I mean, it's not as like crazy as going down to the Icon or the Aspen, but
at least you have a little bit of grip.
At least
in the
you have
front
some traction
with the Recon in the front.
Also, I think a lot of that stuff depends on your skill set too. So, like if you really know you're weak on cornering and like you're gonna just putt really slowly through all the corners to begin with, then go for something super light and fast. If you think you're really strong on cornering, then give something that'll actually like allow you to grip and have an advantage over the other racers out there. So, could have to do with your own personal strengths riding.
Well said.
All right, well, I love this next question.
Go for it.
Yeah, the bike industry is in turmoil. Excessive inventory, bankruptcies, every smaller refinement of the bike that seems to provide little improvement to us weekend warriors. The list goes on. With that being said, would you rather pee your pants every time you laugh or scream in horror when someone says your name?
You love these questions, Jeff. I'm going to say Screaming Horror. You think there's a way around that with like a nickname? You think somebody could say your nickname and then you could just be defined and not screwed?
Well, here's why. See, the problem with these, this or that, is that it has to be extremely well specified. So Screaming Horror, I think your initial assumption is like you could never say that you're like, like you can't like downplay Screaming Horror. No. Like that's got to be a loud yell scream.
Blood shrimp,
whereas pee your pants hurting when you laugh, a couple drops of pee each laugh, no problem. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, I think peeing your pants is like full blown peeing your pants.
Yeah. I was like picturing like
the full bladder every time.
Like, yeah.
See, that's like, not specified.
Or you have to like change, you know, like you're uncomfortable afterwards.
I'm going with Screaming Horror.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if someone were to say my name and I screamed, I'd probably start laughing afterwards.
Yeah. Then you're screwed.
Yeah. Then you could just
you scream and you pee.
But I picked the scream.
Oh, that's pretty funny. So what are you picking, Jeff?
I'm going with pee because if I only pee a drop or two, no big deal.
It's just a drop or two.
Mm-hmm. No big deal.
A little trickle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's fine.
What about you, Jared?
No, I'm going with scream.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that would be pretty funny because I could end up laughing and then I pee. So whatever.
Love the introduction of the question.
I know. Right? Little curveball.
That is hilarious.
Where is this going? Should I be prepared for this?
Had us in the first half.
Yeah.
All right. Jeff? Can you explain your new fascination with the El Jefe and the Rigid Fork? Two questions to help you answer. With the choice between the tirade with the backcountry geometry and the El Jefe with a more traditional geometry, why the El Jefe? Didn't you just sell a flat bar salsa gravel bike that you thought was great? What's with the switch to the somewhat similar El Jefe? And why the Rigid Fork when a lightweight, example, StepCast fork would reduce fatigue and let you ride longer in more varied trails? Even the endurance racers use the suspension fork on the El Jefe, which I have, for the record, been asking him the same thing.
All right. I got all sorts of answers.
Let's see what you got, big boy.
So, to start, the tirade does have, you know, he says more backcountry geometry, but that bike's designed around a 140 fork. So that's like a full-fledged, you know,
trail bike,
trail bike with 140 mil fork. So I can't really put a rigid fork on that. Like it would screw up the Geo too much.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I can put a rigid fork on the El Jefe. And the reason I want to do that is because I did have that flat bar salsa. So it was a salsa cutthroat. They call it a drop bar mountain bike. And it's basically rigid mountain bike Geo with drop bars. I just put flat bars on it and a dropper post. And it ended up being one of the most fun bikes I've ever had. It was just unbelievably light. It's like 20 pounds, unbelievably light, super fast, really fun, really good storage. So you could just kind of bike pack or just always have space on your bike for stuff. And it was just fun. Like it climbed so fast. It was out of control. I could ride it super long. It was fast on the road. Like it was just a really fun, unique bike that I never knew I'd enjoy so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I eventually was like, oh, got to sell this thing. Had it for like almost 2 years. I think I had that thing. And, you know, that's a long time for me. That's like,
that is,
you know, that's you like
put,
a normal
you
person.
You put that thing through hell too.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
I did. I cracked. Put that thing through apps. Yeah, it did crack, which it wasn't the fault of salsa. It was all by itself propped up on a rock while I was like 10 feet away from it, changing into my board shorts to go for a swim in the ocean. And it blew over in the wind and landed on a rock and the rock smashed a hole in the top tube. So, yeah, I was ready to sell that thing, which then I proceeded to ride another like 1,000 miles on that bike with the cracked top tube, and it was totally fine. So
you did for sure do that.
Props to salsa.
You definitely did that.
Yeah, so that thing had seen some good use. And I just thought it was such a fun bike. So I was like, wow, I really want to build something else like that. And it's also, so kind of leading into the second question is why not just, you know, put a suspension fork on it to reduce fatigue and ride longer, yada, yada. It's a little over a pound heavier. Even the absolute lightest cross-country fork is still a pound heavier than a rigid fork, believe it or not. That's a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I already have a Revel Ranger, which is, you know, sort of that light trail, 120 mil in the front, 115 in the back. That's my light trail bike. I don't want another bike that's too close to it. I want to have like some more separation between these bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were to get a regular El Jefe with a suspension fork on it, like it's really close to that Revel Ranger. Like it's so close.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were to make it ultra lightweight, weight weeny, like what I want to do with it, then it'll be more separated from the Ranger.
Mm.
So that's why I want to do that. And because also having no suspension, like, yeah, it does fatigue you way more, especially your neck falls apart when you're just like on a downhill with no suspension. But That's also, to me, half the fun. Like, that's half of why that salsa was fun, because there was no traction, because it really was just sort of loose and out of control on the downhills and super fast everywhere else. And I just thought that was fun. Like, that was enjoyable.
So it makes normal trails seem way more extreme.
Yeah, exactly right. Like, you could push that bike to its limits way easier and, frankly, safer, because, like, that bike at its limits on any given downhill is not really that faster, scarier, dangerous compared to, like, if you take like an enduro bike and you're pushing that to its actual limits, like, that's a dangerously fast speed and gnarly terrain. Whereas if you take a fully rigid mountain bike with 1.9 tires on it and push it to its limits, it's like not really going that fast or riding trails that gnarly.
This weekend, so. I took my road bike down a single track.
Yeah,
and,
there you go.
With road tires, and it was like just for like 10, 15 seconds. It was terrifying.
Yeah, that's
no,
horrible.
No
that's
traction, fun, no, yeah. No give at all. And something I would just go as fast as I could on a mountain bike, I had to just be on the brakes the whole mm-hmm. time. So something different and fun to change yeah. it up a little bit.
See, that's a little too far.
That was too
whereas
far.
Like the rigid mountain bike is like just enough where you can still have fun, but like yeah. you really have to focus. You really have to pick your lines closely. I don't know. It's just a really fun, unique bike. And the salsa proved that to me. And I was like, oh, how can I recreate this ever so slightly differently? And I was like, oh, I could build this El Jefe with the rigid fork.
It's very interesting.
Pretty cool bike.
Very yeah, interesting.
I think it'll be fun.
I'm interested to see after you riding it, if you feel the same way. Like if you
yeah, me
like,
too.
If you go up to these trails and you're like, oh, well, this would be a little more enjoyable with a fork, or like I ended up on this trail where like I, you know, I'm a little in over the head with a solid or rigid fork or whatever.
Yeah.
But obviously it's way faster and like, you know, just speedy everywhere else.
Yeah.
So you're just riding it differently than you would and riding different trails than you would on the Ranger, I guess.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And that salsa, it's obviously lighter because it was a full carbon setup. This will be a titanium frame carbon forks. Like the salsa will be lighter, but that salsa riding around the road, like commuting, like to and from work or whatever, like it's just like the sickest bike.
Yeah.
And having flat bars and a dropper post, you can still bunny hop up all curves that you want and drop off stairs, whatever. So like
wheelies.
Yeah. So yeah. Like right around town, it is the most epic commuter shredder of ever. So I don't know. It's a fun bike. It's definitely an enjoyable, unique bike to build.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty cool.
Don't knock it till you try it.
That's right.
But sick. You do, again, I still think you need differentiation in between the bikes. You can't have them all like so close to each
for
other.
For sure. If you didn't have the Ranger, I would say you're absolutely insane.
Yeah, well, yeah, it would make no sense.
You're clinically, like, yeah, I like, need to check you in
if,
somewhere.
If right? I had like a 140 mil trail bike,
yeah,
you know, then I would just have a regular hardtail yeah. with a suspension fork on it.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Well, there's your answer. It's because he already has a bike that's sick and works great for that application. Trevor, you want
to
read the next one?
Yeah, I really want to hear what Jeff has to answer yeah. about this one.
This is a good one.
If every employee in Worldwide Cyclery had to fight each other in a UFC octagon, who would be the last man standing? Jeff, you should make all your employees get branded with a hot iron to show loyalty to the company. Would make great YouTube content. That would be good content.
Yeah,
you'd probably get arrested afterwards.
This guy sounds like you should be hired for the head of company culture.
Right?
It's two great ideas. Let's all fight each other in a cage match and brand each other.
Maybe brand each other first so we're like extra riled up.
Louis laughing over there.
That's like what they do for not for like cover rodeos, but it's like along those lines, right? Where they like yeah. flick the balls or whatever. It's like brand them and throw them into the octagon.
Yeah.
I'm sticking with my initial thing. Like it would be Trevor and John.
Oh man.
Or maybe, I don't know, maybe Daniel has some crazy
things. I don't know.
Like
I feel like
Weaver, dude.
I feel like Wade. I know. I feel like
heavy
Wade,
dude, and Wade, he actually would care to compete.
Yeah.
Wade exactly, really does play a big around. Difference when you're fighting.
Yeah.
Like, whether it be like jiu-jitsu or wrestling or whatever, there's weight classes for a reason.
Yeah.
And I feel like I would have no chance against Zach.
Oh, yeah.
Or no John.
Way. But he's got messed up feet, dude. He it's can't even walk days. Around. Huh?
It's only some days. Some days his feet are okay. Other days he's got like
I mean,
weird
I would,
blister infections.
I would try my hardest, but I would not. I would fight Zach, but I would not fight John.
Well, many moons ago, I thought this was a hilarious idea because I saw one of these at a carnival one time and did it, and it was so fun. It was a sumo wrestling sort of jolly jump thing. Yeah. So you get a huge bouncy house sort of Jolly Jump boxing ring, and then you get these sumo wrestler suits that come with it, like huge ones. Like you can barely move in these things. They have the helmet and everything. They're disgusting because they're like used and people sweating them. And then you just like go to town sumo wrestling in this ring. It's the funniest thing ever. So I got that for the company party. And everyone wrestled each other, and it was the funniest stuff.
I missed out on that one. That sounds amazing.
It was hilarious. I think we should do that again.
We got pretty into it. People got pretty into that.
Yeah, and a former employee who took it way too seriously was definitely the winner. And also just like
some anger out.
Livid. Yeah. Like she needs to go to therapy for after sure, that. It's like, well, now we know who needs to go to therapy.
just let out all the aggression for sure. Yeah.
But we should really do that again. That was fun.
I'm going to say, yeah, I don't know. Who's the last man standing in your world in this octagon?
I think Weaver.
Yeah.
I just think because he's big and he would try hard.
Yeah.
I think it'd be him and John probably.
Yeah.
I think Tyler would throw down too.
Yeah, true.
Also, Waymire could probably throw down. He's strong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But again, like I think weight and height play more of an advantage than anything.
Yeah. He's got the size. Weaver's got the size.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not even in the top 20.
He's big bird for a reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although it is pretty interesting to think about like the weight class and like who would versus who, you know, like I don't know who Liam would fight. Probably you. You guys are the closest in weight.
Yeah, we've got some featherweights spread across the company.
You and Tyler McKinney.
Yeah, we got some featherweights.
He'd be like, "No, man, I'm cool. You guys go
ahead." Yeah, he's like, "No, I just don't want to do that, man."
I would pay to watch that.
What do you want me to do? No, I don't want to do that.
And Louis and Tyler McKinga just like, "No, you guys, it's cool, man." Yeah, man. People would pay money. I would for sure pay money for these fights. That'd be hilarious.
Well, maybe I'll spring and get that sumo wrestling.
That'd be funny.
Yeah. We'll do that this summer.
We can do sumo jousting.
Oh, that's hilarious. We've got time for one more question, and we got a note from episodes past that's pretty funny as well we need to get to. All right. How do you get mountain bike forks to feel amazing?
I would say run it as soft as you can before it gets too soft where you're just bottoming out the whole time. You really want as much traction as you can. And I would say don't run too much compression because it's just going to get super harsh. Just don't go extreme with it, I would say. Like find a middle ground and then go from there.
Yeah. People are always like, "Oh, I want to put volume spacers in there, like, you know, run as much compression," or just like, no, just like
or
go back
like,
to basics.
If you think that if you're going to go fast, you want to go super fast. I need to pump my fork up super hard, like Aaron Gwynn. Like,
yeah, I know.
You're going to lose your control, and your suspension is at the end of the day, it's your control, and you need to have as much control as you can to be safe. So, I would run it on the softer side if you can.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jeff?
I would also say just like a word of advice is don't use any compression.
Yeah.
Like have it fully open.
Run it open.
Yeah.
Wide open.
I tend to run on my forks like I'm running a Zeb right now and a Lyric, and I tend to run my high-speed compression all the way open unless I'm riding something super aggressive or super rocky with a bunch of drops and stuff. I'll literally just add one click of compression and a couple clicks of low speed. Makes a world of difference, but nothing more than that really.
Yeah, just tread lightly with those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Three clicks max on either one.
Yeah, for sure.
For pretty much everyone, you know. If you're a pro racer, you're not asking this question, but it's a different scenario. But most people, just try and get your air pressure dialed in correctly and then leave your compression settings totally open or just like one, two clicks for each one.
Make sure your rebound's not too extreme.
Yeah, try to not mess up your rebound.
The rebound's pretty important. If you're too fast, it's going to be super out of control. If it's too slow, it might feel like you're in a lot of control, but you're not taking as much, like using your suspension as you should be. And it's not going to work good.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Well, let's get to this note from episodes past here. Following on from my most important question a few months back of should I stay with my partner despite the fact that she had a tan wall Max's front tire and a black Schwalbe rear tire, things have turned out well. After your sterling relationship advice that I should buy her a matching tire, which I did, she now has matching Schwalbe tires on a new Canyon Neuron, things have turned out well. She has agreed to marry me.
Nice.
So if it hadn't been for the excellent advice from Worldwide Cyclery, I would doubtless have been lonely, single, and without a mountain bike riding partner. So many thanks. P.S. You'll be delighted to know that I am sporting matching tires also. Max's Forecaster tires front and rear. Jeff was right about how good these tires are.
Nice.
That's...
Wow. That was kind and inspiring and positive, and I just really thought I was going the other way. So really happy.
Yeah, that's a good story. That was like a note that's passed and a fantastic testimonial all in one. So
yeah, it was.
Congratulations, you know, that she agreed to marry you. That's awesome. I think that the tires had a huge part in that. No, I'm just kidding. But thank you for tuning in and for listening to our advice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. Well, I'm just also happy that they're now all have, you know, great couple with matching tires.
Yeah.
So
the world is okay.
The world is okay.
In some places.
There's more peace on earth when people have matching tire brands and black and tan wall.
Mm.
Yeah.
So. If we can just match our tires, we'd all get along.
That's all I got.
Yep. That's all he's got.
Well, if you've made it this far, thank you very much. We genuinely appreciate it. For any questions, if you'd like us to answer them, send them to podcast@worldwidecyclery.com.
That's right.
That's an email address.
Send them in. You
can also find in the show notes.
That's right.
And also importantly, please leave us a review if you can. It really helps us out. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on YouTube, hit the little subscribe button, little thumbs up thing.
Yeah.
Genuinely appreciate that.
Screenshot it.
And if you screenshot
send it
your review, email that over to podcast@worldwidecyclery.com and Jared will give you
a gift.
A gift of
$15 of the website.
Nice. $15 discount.
$15 holla.
Which a $15 discount is actually a pretty good deal because that's basically 50% off grips or more, 60% off pair of grips, half off some brake pads.
Yep.
It's a good deal.
It's like a bowl from Chipotle.
There you go.
Yeah.
Half off a bottle of Fox 20 weight gold.
We don't sell bowls from Chipotle.
No, we don't.
Maybe one day.
Maybe one day. But until then.
Until then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheerio.
Cheerio.